Welcome to The Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, we'll be discussing Reacher getting a spinoff. Bane and Deathstroke are going to buddy up. Reviews of Megalopolis or Flopolopolis, whatever it's called. Lee and Nobody Wants This. And our topic this week is the horror of true crime. Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today, my fellow host, John Davenport.
Hey, buddy.
Amanda Sink.
Hello, hello.
And that's it. Troy is off this week.
Goodbye forever.
Wow. Jesus.
Just kidding. Just kidding. Just kidding. Just kidding.
It took such a turn.
We missed you already.
Yeah, it's coming through shiningly. Remember, you can always find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com. Join our Facebook group, The Hollywood Outsider, or we're on X at Buy Popcorn and Threads also, and also Discord. I don't know. We're all over the place. Find it. So what's going on with you guys? How you doing?
Overwhelmed, stressed, present.
I'm fine.
Well, good. I'm glad we're all bringing the joy, you know? Jesus.
It's rough times in America, okay?
It's great times, man. It is Halloween month. It is officially the time.
That is true.
Of Halloween. It is. Mm-hmm. I'm super excited. Are you guys doing anything different this year? Like for Halloween month, you got any new movies? Like Strange Darling, maybe you should add that to your list or what?
I am going through and seeing what movies I'm going to start watching on a pretty regular basis this month. I was looking through Peacock and I noticed that Peacock actually has a pretty decent library of horror films.
You're intentionally going through Peacock? Like that's where you decide, you're like, I got to go through Peacock and see what's up over here. Not Shudder. But Peacock.
I have Shudder also, but I was looking to see what else I can find in other places.
Well, that makes this worse.
Because he has Shudder and he's still going to Peacock?
Yeah.
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 What'd you find, John? Come on. I don't want to harsh your buzz, man. What'd you find?
Stuff.
Like what? They had some great stuff. Like what? What'd you find?
Come back to me.
Jesus. God. Well, what a great reference. Oh, yeah. I met the greatest guy this weekend. What's his name? Oh,
I don't know.
Okay. Great story. You're not allowed to tell stories anymore. You're grounded. What about you, Amanda? You got anything that you're adding to the list? Anything you want to see?
I don't know if there's anything I want to see that I haven't seen, but I will always watch Scream. So I'll be rewatching the Scream movies probably for sure. And I feel like I usually watch a Saw movie. But I'm thinking I'm going to have like a little Halloween get together thing. So that'll be fun.
Oh, you're going to have some might call that a party, not a party.
Some may call it a party.
Oh, a little gathering, a little
gathering of the spirits.
Nice. You're going to have like a Ouija board.
I hope so.
Okay. Well, have fun with that.
I just hope that the ghosts, maybe they have money they can chip into rent.
You could do like a GoFundMe Halloween party.
I love that idea. Best costume pays my rent.
Do you want to pay my rent?
I live in Denver, okay?
I'm going to a Halloween party this year myself. I haven't gone to one in quite a long time, and I'm kind of excited. People from my gym are all getting together for a Halloween party, and I'm pretty thrilled. And back to my original comment.
No. Stop. You can't just monologue past that. You can't bring it up and then just ramble through it. So you have a gym Halloween party?
Yeah.
What does that mean? Like everybody's, you dress up?
Are you guys going to have to work out?
No, we're not like working out. This is going to be just a straight up get together, be in costume, have a good time, and you know, social hour.
Okay.
And it's not going to be at the gym. The owner of these four gyms that I go to is actually renting a location for us all to go to, and it's going to be a good time.
Sounds fun. Do you guys know what your costumes are going to be yet? Or is it too early to tell?
It's too early to tell, but I keep on going back to Gomez Adams.
Oh, so you don't have to buy anything?
Pretty much.
Bazinga.
Ironic, because that is the couple's costume that I'm looking at. But I don't know, because I want something that's a little more unique. You know, I did Barbie last year, and that was the first year I feel like I did something very cliche in a long time.
I usually take Halloween very seriously, but I am stuck on what I want to be this year, other than awesome. I can't
decide. That'd be like the first time for you, wouldn't it?
It'd be the first time if I'm not awesome. Yeah. Yeah. It'd be new. I don't like new ground like that. Mm-mm. A lot going on this month. So it's going to be, you know, a lot less time to plan. So I'm going to have to see what I got. Last year I went as Ken. I thought that was a fun time. So I don't know what I'm going to do this year. I'm curious what other people are doing. Like, what is the buzzy costume of the season? I didn't expect the Addams Family to be, I mean, I guess Wednesday maybe, but not.
Mm-hmm.
Not those two, not Morticia and Gomez. So that's kind of an interesting turn. Maybe I'll go as Beetlejuice. Just bring it home.
Good choice. It's very topical.
How are you going to pull that off? I mean, just are you just going to wear your normal clothes?
You can't use the same joke I already used on you back at me. Because what it does is all the stings already been taken out because I already used it. So that's how.
So the
that's how
I'm rubber, work. Your glue defense doesn't work, huh?
No.
All right.
You got to come just up with your own shit, man. Can't just rip me off. All right, you're not Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah, I am.
You're not. Speaking of guys who are full of themselves, so Daniel Day-Lewis is unretiring to work on a movie with his son. This literally just came out before we started recording. Daniel Day-Lewis and Ronan Day-Lewis, his son, they co-wrote a film, and they are going to do it together. He's coming out of retirement for this. And it's described as an exploration of the intricate relationships between fathers, sons and brothers, as well as the dynamics of familial bonds. And I feel sorry for anyone that's trying to win an Oscar that year, because you're probably going to lose.
Yeah, the Academy Awards love them.
Yeah, is like Daniel Day-Lewis going to play the dad and the brother at the same time?
And the son.
All right.
And it's Anna Monet is the name of the movie. So interesting. I mean, he's coming out of retirement. This is the second time he's retired and the second time he's unretired. So I guess he retires again. Nobody should really care. Just assume he'll probably come back when he's ready to.
He must be tired of making shoes or something.
No, he probably bought a new house, got extra shelf space. He's like, I could use a couple more awards. All right. Well, something we can move on to that's exciting is that Reacher has a spinoff. Official. It was reported like a while ago, but that was not confirmed. Now it's confirmed. So Maria Sten will lead Prime Video's untitled Neagly project. And when she learns that a beloved friend from her past has been killed in a suspicious accident, she becomes hell-bent on justice. Using everything she's learned from Jack Reacher in her time as a member of the 110 Special Investigators, Neely puts herself on a dangerous path to uncover a menacing evil. And I'm sure they're going to get Jack Reacher in this bad boy as well. So I am a huge fan of the books. I know Neely is really a small part of those books. She's not, she doesn't have her own series. You know what I mean? But I think this is fantastic because I think Maria Sten really created a much more layered, deeper character than existed on the page. And she's made it her own. And it's time for her own series. I love this. I absolutely love this.
I love this too. This is going to be exciting to see what they do with it. I like the idea of this being such a powerful heroine lead for her, especially the way the character plays out in Reacher.
So are you saying that this is there's going to be a lot more original content built into it because it's not as developed on page?
Yeah. Yeah. There's no existing story. This is
I new. Like that.
Why do you like that? I mean, you didn't read the book, so you didn't miss anything. It's all new to
well,
you.
Well, no, but just... I feel like it gives a more fair criticism because when it's an adaptation based on a book, critics are very, very tough on it, whether that's legitimate critics or just audience critics. And it makes it harder for me to know if it's something that I actually want to invest my time in. So when it's based on the original story, there's not biased perspective built into it.
Did you watch the first two seasons of Reacher? You watched the first season. I remember that. Did you watch the second one?
First season and like half of the second season, I think.
You didn't finish it?
I don't know. I feel like I did, but I might not have because I don't remember what it is.
Wow. I'm looking forward to whatever they do with it. And I'm glad she's got her own show. I hope they both just keep popping up in each other's show, though. Like, even if it's just for an episode.
That'd be fun. That'd be cute.
It'd be kind of heartbreaking for her to not show up in a Reacher episode, because she offsets Reacher so well.
I'll have to find somebody else to do that. I mean, there's a lot of adventures in his books where she never pops up, and the character itself, and it's just Jack Reacher. And honestly, I think they probably need to do a season, now that they have this option, where it's more minimal. Back to like the first season, you know? Let Jack Reacher stand on his own a little bit more. Stranger Things is bringing Frank Darabont back. Speaking of retirement, I should have segued to this earlier, but it's just a... If you don't know who Frank Darabont is, he's one of the best directors ever, I think. He did Shawshank Redemption. He did Green Mile. He created The Walking Dead. He's very... The Mist. He's fantastic with Stephen King properties and anything horror, that's for sure. So the idea of him directing a couple Stranger Things episodes for the final season is pretty exciting news. And I think that's something that we should be excited about when we get filmmakers coming back, like very talented filmmakers coming back to the forefront. Unless they're Francis Ford Coppola. Maybe then we have a longer discussion.
I'm really excited about this because I feel like with everything that he's done that you reflect on, I mean, even just with the titles you mentioned, those are some of the best properties and most like notable properties that have existed. Mm-hmm. And so I get very excited about what he could do with Stranger Things.
Yeah. It's your last shot out the door. Go crazy with it. Do something fun. All right. So sources told The Hollywood Reporter that Bane, that steroid injecting freak who was previously in The Dark Knight Rises, you know, he talk like this. He's that guy. And Deathstroke, another, if you don't know who that is, it's another popular arch nemesis from the comic books that was originally going to be played by Joe Manganiello, but never got the chance. They're being lassoed together for a movie. James Gunn and Peter Safran, the DC studios, are going to make a combo film of some sort. We don't know what kind of combo it is. I'm guessing maybe Deadpool and Wolverine-ish, but the script is coming from Matthew Orton, who wrote the upcoming Captain America Brave New World. So this is an interesting development because we haven't heard much new stuff coming out of DC Studios just yet. So this is our first taste.
Yeah, it seems like they're playing a lot of things close to the vest. I mean, any news that is coming out really has everything to do with Superman because that's the movie that's being filmed at the moment. It's going to be an interesting take, I guess, because Deathstroke and Bane are such different characters. I don't know how a buddy cop comedy or buddy cop movie is going to work with the two of them. They are pretty much staples in the Bat family when it comes to villains. Deathstroke has his beginnings as being a heel for the Teen Titans, which is where you find Robin, and Bane, obviously, what he was created specifically to be a heel for Batman. So it's I don't know how to take it. I don't know how to. I'll be interested to see what they come up with, but it's not something I'm excited about yet.
Really? I'm kind of surprised.
I have reservations for anything DC and Marvel still to this point. So I will watch it, but I'm going to be trepidatious about it.
So Deadpool versus Wolverine and Wolverine. I don't know why I keep saying versus. That didn't win you back to Marvel?
It was a great win that I think we all knew was going to be a win. But to me, that doesn't change the trajectory.
Sure.
Until we see more of it. We have to see consistency before I'm like, okay, I trust you again.
Yeah, right now, Deadpool and Wolverine is a one-off versus everything else that's out there.
Yeah, in DC, right. We all know what's up with them, right?
It's hard to get excited, you know, unless you've got mm-hmm. Harley Quinn in it. It's hard to get excited about it for some reason.
I am shocked he's putting so many eggs in the Superman basket. I know if you're a diehard Superman fan, you're probably excited for it. I don't know many people that are diehard Superman fans anymore. I feel like that's an older property that's kind of lost a little bit of its luster in today's more anti-hero rich department, you know?
This goes back to the interview with Frank Darabont about why he's coming back to Stranger Things, where we live in this world where we put villains essentially up on a pedestal, and we're constantly watching shows or movies that are about villains taking advantage of people or hurting people or something to that effect. And there's so few things out there focus on the good in people. And that's why he wanted to come back for Stranger Things. But also that's probably why we're focusing on Superman, because if you can do him right, Big Blue is all about compassion and kindness. So it's going to be interesting. It makes sense for that reason.
We need that. Honestly,
yes, we do.
I need that. I don't even like Superman as a character. I think Superman is a super bland character, personally. And don't get me wrong, I love Christopher Reeve, and I love Henry Cavill and everything else. Henry Cavill at least made him interesting to me again.
Mm-hmm.
But I also am just tired of dark and dour and rage-fueled everything, I think. So yeah. something happy and positive sounds promising to me. If you could bring that back to the forefront, I would be super excited, which is kind of why I'm a little surprised by this. We're going to have this villain face off of some sort. Meanwhile, we're trying to kind of up the positivity to a degree on the DC front. But you got to have villains. I get that. I'm just kind of surprised about this. All right. Well, moving on. Hellboy, the Crooked Man is skipping theaters and hitting direct to digital October 8th. Probably by the time you hear this, I don't know. And many jumped on the bandwagon of that it must be poo. I don't know. I haven't seen it. I really probably don't have any desire to see it. I just think it's a bit ironic, because just a couple years ago, there were loud voices everywhere demanding everything come to digital immediately. And now we're back to the idea that everything direct to digital is bad, when we have wonderful films that are on direct to digital, that Omniloop, Continue. These are both very good films that went direct to digital. So are we just freaking hypocrites nowadays? Or we can't accept that things can go both ways, if you know what I mean?
I think it's more about this is a significant enough property that is surprising it's going straight to digital. We're not in that world where these big franchise movies, and I understand it doesn't typically sell very well, if I remember right, on box office for the Hellboy movies. I think it did well in the beginning and then it started to kind of taper. But you can probably correct me if I'm wrong, Aaron. I feel like when you have a property or like a franchise like that, people are anticipating it to go to theaters. So when it doesn't go to theaters, then it's like, well, is there something not good about this that we're not even willing to take the opportunity to put it there? That we're just going to send it to digital.
I mean, I guess I can understand that. I mean, I would probably, I don't know, I make the argument that Hellboy is not that top tier of a property that some make it out to be. I mean, the first two movies did okay. They were never monster successes. And the last one was a flop-o. So to me, I'm not surprised at all that this would go direct to digital, even if it was a more high quality production or something. Like, to me, it's just really a kind of a mid-level property to begin with.
I think this one also has the issue of like, it doesn't have any big name talent to bring it up, right? The star of the movie isn't David Harbour or Ron Perlman. It's somebody that nobody really knows of too much. He's a stuntman. And so everyone's already got this idea that it's already maligned and it's experience, then I guess that has a lot more to do with it. So when you already have that, and then you say, okay, well, it's going to go straight to digital, then you start creating this, you can easily create this narrative of it's going to be a bad experience.
I just think it's funny. I think it's funny. Like everybody was trying to convince me that direct to digital is top tier now. And theaters are going away. And now if it doesn't go to the theater, it's crap. So like, pick a side. Like what lane are we in? Or we can't stay in a lane for longer than 2 months. I don't understand. But I'm glad movie theaters are still successful.
I understand your argument. I could get behind your argument a little bit more if you were talking about a movie like Megalopolis or by like Deadpool and Wolverine. And yet everyone is saying it's going to be poo-poo because going straight to home video, or it's going to be poo-poo because, yeah, I can get behind your argument. I don't think this is the one where you should be putting up any sort of like stake polls or anything about how people are being hypocrites about it.
Well, I will tell you, whether people that saw the trailer, people that didn't see the trailer is kind of weak. I'll give you that. But as soon as I started seeing articles where it's going direct to digital, people said, "Well, this must be garbage." I mean, I saw that instantly when that news came out. And to me, that means, well, so you see direct to digital as bad, right? Because they expect, like, quality productions or big productions should go to a theater. That's the way that people, I assume, see it. And the fact that it wasn't means that it's automatically garbage. They don't even give it a chance, which maybe it just had a very low production budget because it was a very under the table kind of production, you know?
Oh yeah, nobody knew this was coming until it was almost here.
Just showed up, guy starring in it, and he's like, "I'm in a movie this week." Who knew? So, yeah,
he didn't even know he was in the movie.
He had no idea. No idea. Jack Keatsy is his name. He's the latest Hellboy. We're always trying to make Hellboy happen, though. Always. That's the takeaway.
It's just not Fetch. Stop trying to make Fetch happen.
There you go. It's not. I really think it's a character that maybe is just better suited to a comic book.
What?
It happens. There are definitely those that exist. So our show is independently funded. Therefore, all the expenses are from our own pockets, and Patreon helps fans support their favorite podcast. You can get immediate access to all content in your respective tier, though, if you sign up, including we have our new episode from season 2 of Inspired by a True Story out on Patreon now. Doesn't release until October 14th. And the rest of the podcast feeds, but you can hear it now if you go to patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. That's patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. And you can always hear those earlier on Patreon. So, and we'll talk more about that show and that topic when we get to true crime, because it's kind of, you know, all connected. Now I want to go to spoiler-free reviews, where we try to, you know, keep the spoilers out of these things. And we're going to talk about three properties. And one is, it's a probably, you know what, it's probably already out of the theater and on its way to digital by the time you hear this podcast. That's how much of a megaflopolis this was. So let's talk about Megalopolis.
So this one's about a conflict between Caesar, a genius artist who seeks to leap into utopian idealistic future, and his opposition, Mayor Franklin Cicero, who remains committed to a regressive status quo, perpetuating greed, special interests, and partisan warfare. This is directed by Francis Ford Coppola, and it's also got Mr. Driver, Adam Driver, in it as our lead. Aaron, is this... I gotta first say, the reviews so far are not great. On Rotten Tomatoes, we've got a 52%. Do you resonate with those reviewers, or do you feel different?
Oh, yeah, on the aggregate, there are, you know, it's Rotten Tomatoes is an aggregate, and some, there are some out there giving it a 9 or a 10. And I feel like that's name value. That's Francis Ford Coppola's name, because I go under 5. Like, there's no way this movie even gets to 5. It is a terrible film.
Whoa.
Yeah, it is not good. You can have all the visuals, the cinematography is great, shot compositions, there's some interesting work being done with the camera and special effects and whatnot. And for people that don't know, Francis Ford Coppola funded this himself through his wine vineyard money to the tune of $120 million. No studio would touch it. That should be your first indicator. Studios didn't want anything to do with it. Finally got Lionsgate on board. They basically released it, but they took no penalty. So it's all Francis Ford Coppola's money. That is, that's the skin in the game, right? Lionsgate doesn't have a whole lot invested in this release, and it opened, it was an absolute flop when it opened. And then there's a very good reason for it. Like, it is not good. It is just, it's a very incoherent story. It's nonsensical. I feel like I get it. The guy is a story director. He directed the Godfather trilogy. You know, he's someone who has created a wide plethora of classic films. Today is not his day. This is not his shining achievement as he goes off into the sunset. It is just not a good film. It's very much about the idea being that New Hope is very convoluted. It's tied into Roman mythology to a degree, but it also is kind of part of the modern day. And it becomes like a big giant sermon about good versus bad and where we are in society and where we could go. Adam Driver is Caesar. He's working to create this utopia that'll be like this perfect world outside of the world, the tragic world that we live in now. and everyone will be happy. He's like, he's creating heaven, essentially. And nobody believes in him because they want power, they want money, they want greed, da 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 da. He ends up falling for the Mayor Cicero's daughter, who's played by Natalie Emmanuel. And it's just, I mean, it's the haves versus the have-nots, but everybody that the story is about are actually all the haves. You have Shia LaBeouf as his cousin, who's just constantly trying to tear him down because he hates how successful and popular he is, and he's just a nobody, and he's also weird as hell, and he's got a mullet, and I don't know why he's got a mullet, but he's got a mullet, and I feel like I'm in ramble soup right now, because that's how I felt watching it. And it's also freaking boring. The pacing is terrible. It's just not a good movie. And then Emmanuel's character, Julia, the last act, she's very important to the first two-thirds of the movie. In the last act, she disappears for literally a half hour. Has no value for a half an hour. Like, the major character is just gone for no real explanation. It's just, this is a terrible movie.
Well, first of all, this sounds really awful. One of the questions I was going to ask you about is
positives. There's a couple.
Whether you feel this way and have a stronger critique for it because you know the capabilities of Coppola, or if this is, you know, very much just the movie itself failed in so many aspects. And I feel like that's what I just took away from that last part.
Yeah, no, I have no skin in the game of Francis Ford Coppola. I'm not a big Godfather fan, so he doesn't do a ton for me, but I respect his contribution to the arts. I mean, just because I'm not a big mob movie guy doesn't mean that he's not a great director. He's had a history of some great films. This is just not one of them. It is just a movie that is clunky. The story is all over the place. It's very nonsensical. The only two people that really put any worth into this, that make this worth watching it at all, are Aubrey Plaza, because she's basically Adam Driver's jilted mistress who ends up doing everything she can to get as rich as she can, but also kind of tear Caesar down, Adam Driver's character, and Shia LaBeouf, because Shia LaBeouf is literally taking it to an 11. I mean, he's basically acting how we all expect him to be in real life. That's how bonkers he is. Yeah. And besides those two, there's nothing here that I even think is... I even think Adam Driver, who I normally really like his performances, and I think he's a very talented actor, I find nothing of substance in this role. I just don't...
So when you said that there are positives and there's good in this movie, you really just meant that there are two solid actors.
No, I mean, like, there are moments, like I said earlier, the composition, some of the framing of the shot, some of the transitions, there is some artistic merit there. There's some real value in, you can see the flashes of genius that obviously exist in Francis Ford Coppola's head. Unfortunately, not all of it is coming through. It's jumbled. It's like cherry picking. And unfortunately, the story isn't part of that picking. It's all just visual flashes, and it's not consistent. It's not even like a consistently, like, there are a lot of directors who have visual flair, and they can make a movie just pop just on visuals. Michael Bay is one of those directors, right? He doesn't have to have the best characters. He can make visuals pop to make you kind of get invested in the story. Even the visuals aren't enough to carry this. Like, the story is just that bad. It's a wreck. I mean, I thought Uwe Boll was going to show up at some point because it's just that poorly directed.
So if the full price of admission were $10, what would you pay for Megalopolis?
$350.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, wow.
That's brutal.
I almost walked out. If you don't know me, I've hardly ever walked out of a movie. I've walked out of two movies in my entire life, Green Knight and Natural Born Killers. And this was almost the third. I was very close to walking out. It's just...
Wow.
And then I got to a point where, like, well, I got to see how it ends. I mean, I made it this far. I made it, like, you know, 2 hours. Let's go to 15 minutes. Let's ride this out. And I wish I would have left.
he's so angry.
I could have got my 15 minutes back.
Yeah.
Just damn.
It's not even worth watching to see if it could be better.
Not good. Not good at all. Oh, But now we move on to something great the way I hear it. I don't know if this is true, but nobody wants this.
I want all of this. I just want that on the record.
Okay.
Amanda took the time to sit down and watch this, apparently, as you guys can tell. Nobody Wants This is an American romantic comedy series created by Aaron Foster. It stars Kristen Bell, Adam Brody, and it centers around an unlikely relationship between an outspoken agnostic woman and an unconventional rabbi exploring themes of faith, identity, and love. So, Amanda, you sat down and watched this over the weekend. How does the dynamic between the outspoken agnostic and the unconventional rabbi challenge tradition? Depictions of relationships in romantic comedies?
That was a really long question. I'm sorry. I might have to have you repeat it.
How does how does the dynamic between outspoken agnostics and and an unconventional rabbi? See, I did it perfectly near perfectly the first time, and now that I'm trying to slow it down,
stutter it out. Yep.
How does the dynamic between an outspoken
agnostic... How do their dynamics?
All right.
I'm going home. No, I'm with you. I'm just trying to summarize it for my brain. I have ADHD. I have short-term memory loss, I'm pretty sure. So how does their dynamic...
Challenge the traditional depictions of relationships in romantic comedies.
Okay. So I guess what I would say to that is a lot of the romantic comedies about relationships and challenging between religion is more about, I feel like, them bumping heads or having to really like come to terms with things.
As opposed to bumping uglies? Yeah.
And I feel like Nobody Wants This is more about how can we compromise? There are a lot of very healthy tones, and the things that are notable as unhealthy while they're trying to like move through these uncomfortable dynamics in their relationship, they're not depicted in a way as though, hey, this is like positive of how we do this. It's, you know, making it normal of how some people respond to those situations, but also acknowledging that that's not the right approach to it. And so from that perspective, I really like that you're getting to see both sides of, you know, an agnostic and a rabbi. And then also in that relationship, how do they come to terms and manage their ideologic viewpoints and how that's going to align in their values and their relationship? Can they overcome that? And the two characters are written so beautifully. And at first I was worried about the chemistry between Kristen Bell and Adam Brody, but as they move along and by the end of the show, especially when you get to see a very romantic moment between the two of them, you immediately fall for their relationship and their chemistry.
Do you think the show could spark meaningful conversations about religious tolerance and understanding, or does it risk oversimplifying those complex issues for comedic effect?
I wouldn't say that it oversimplifies it. I think it does a really great job of keeping it light enough that it's still an enjoyable topic and it's an enjoyable show. And they use, you know, that good old Kristen Bell snarkiness, and Adam Brody has a very similar approach. And so they really bounce off each other in a beautifully fun way. But they're also still bringing up, you know, how you might see or feel about certain situations. And you have to challenge those things potentially within yourself, but it's also not pressuring you to feel one way or the other. It's just an element to their relationship, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. So you talked a lot about Kristen Bell and about Adam Brody. Do you have a favorite character that's not the two of them?
It's hard not to love them or anything more than them because they are, well, I'm a little biased in this, so I have to be honest here. Kristen Bell is Veronica Mars was like the character that I always wanted to be. And Adam Brody in the OC was always the character that I wanted to be with. So I'm very biased about this collective relationship occurring on television for me. But they really do stand out as the most entertaining characters there's Kristen Bell does have a sister, and she has really great supporting chemistry with Kristen Bell, but it's hard to really care about any of the additional stories as much as you do when you get the Kristen Bell and Adam Brody screen times.
All right. Well, you don't normally do the price value for shows, but if you had to, if $10 is a full price of your subscription to a service to watch this, what would you pay?
Well, I think I pay $19.99 through Netflix. So obviously I was willing to spend that, but on an individual basis, I would give it $8.50. I really, really liked it. And I burned through all of the episodes, the 5 hours of episodes in a single night, and I'm ready for more.
Very cool. Thank you very much.
What do you mean? We always do scores. That's not new.
On television shows.
Yeah, we do.
Not when, always.
When they're proper reviews, when they're not just like, what'd you watch last week?
Okay, so our last spoiler-free review is going to be for a movie called Lee, which has Alexander Skarsgård and Kate Winslet. We've also got a little Andy Samberg in here and Marion Cotillard, so I'm excited to talk about them. But Lee Miller is an American photographer and former fashion model who serves as an acclaimed war correspondent for Vogue magazine during World War II. Aaron, you saw this. You've been raving about it. You mm-hmm. told me, you know, if I wanted to, I could watch it. I didn't get a chance to, but usually that only happens when you think I'm going to really like it. Mm-hmm. So tell me more about why that is, what you loved about it so much.
Well, she's an amazing woman, first of all, and a person. She was a former model who was trying to basically find her next step because, you know, I know times have changed a little bit, but in this time, right around World War II, you would age out of modeling, right? The older you got, the less desirable you were. There were men who would not even put you in their magazines once you hit a certain age because they didn't find, quote unquote, you desirable. So she's trying to segue to her next role. What is that? What does that mean? Where's my place in life? And, you know, she finds love with Alexander Skarsgård and whatnot. He's Roland. And she's trying to figure out, like, what do I do? Because she's very independent. She's very strong-willed. She's very fierce. She's independent. She's very gruff and a little too on point sometimes, a little too direct. And what she ends up doing is realizing that she is a quite accomplished photographer. She, from having a life of having her picture taken, she doesn't want to be in front of the camera anymore. She wants to be behind it. She wants to stage shots and capture moments. And I don't want to say create a memory, but, you know, capture the memory and preserve it for everyone else. And as she gets more and more into it, she doesn't want to just do flowers and models. She wants to capture something real, something that's important to her. And what is important to her is what's happening in World War II. She wants to be on the front lines, which they're not allowed. Women aren't allowed on the front lines in World War II. So she does everything she can to fight to get to that level. And through that, she's also capturing a very limited experience in terms of the women that suffered in World War II. You know, there's so much made about the soldiers and what they went through, but not much is spoken of or talked about the innocence through all that and everything that they went through. And she really spent some time capturing a lot of that. The women in the military who were there to assist, the women who were raped and suffered at the hands of these evildoers. And ultimately, it all led to, you know, an iconic shot that she takes in Hitler's bathtub, which is also captured in the film. She was just a very, very remarkable woman, and it's very renowned, a feminist icon, and one of the most renowned photographers of all time, and it's just nice to see her story told. And most people don't know her story.
Do you feel like the story, it sounds like I might understand that maybe the story is giving you more empathy and emotion behind her own story rather than, you know, focusing only on the external stories? Like, obviously you're going to feel empathy and sympathetic for the things that are occurring that she's telling stories about, but are they really driving the emotion on the things that she was experiencing too?
Yeah, I think so. Yes, everything is through her lens, so to speak. I mean, that's what's driving the story is the picture she's trying to take. And Andy Samberg is actually her co-driver, I guess, on much of this. Her best friend who kind of comes along with her and joins her as she goes throughout different parts of Europe, seeing the remains that World War II has left and all the damage that Hitler has done. David, he plays David. And I got to say, he's very, very understated, very, very good. But it's through her eyes, and yes, we see pieces of the destruction that's left, but it's really focused on her, yes, and on her journey and why this moved her so much. And it could have been fleshed out a little bit more in terms of her reasoning for wanting to do all of this, why this is so important to her. But overall, I mean, it's a powerful journey, I think.
Real quick, because you mentioned Andy Samberg, would you agree that he is usually a love him or hate him kind of actor?
He's honestly, I think he's usually a I want to punch him in the face kind of actor. Like, I just.
Yeah. People either love him or they hate him. And yeah. You're usually somebody who doesn't like him, right?
Minus so I want to understand. A box. I think that's pretty funny, but
yeah. Fair.
Yeah.
But tell me more about how, especially for people who maybe are hesitant because of Andy Samberg, why you felt differently about him in this film, what he does different than what he's normally portraying.
He's playing a character. He's not just trying to be an outlandish, absurd, comedic vehicle, if you will. He's playing a character. David is very much someone who cares for Lee and also cares about this journey, about getting these pictures to get out there in the public so people see the horrors that actually happened here. And, you know, unfortunately, he's fighting the same government that Lee is fighting. You know, governments don't want to show even more tragedy to the masses, you know, because it's all about keeping people in line, that sort of thing. So he has a stake in this. It's not his story, but he's part of the story. And it's the fact that he's not trying to raise the volume, if you will. He's just there to complement, you know, one of the best actors working today.
The last thing that I want to touch on is Ellen Kuras, who is the cinematographer from Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind and a lot of other projects that she's done, very renowned in her work. And she is making her directorial debut with this film and reuniting with Kate Winslet. Did you feel like there was a real energy between the camera and between Kate Winslet just because of maybe that former relationship that they've built and that bond?
Yeah. And I feel like this is a, you know, Kate Winslet is a phenomenal actor. I think everybody already knows this, right? She's one of the best. I think she's one of the best actors working today. She does stellar work in anything she does. And she's also, she's not going to put herself out there for someone she doesn't believe in. I believe that because she has the stature. She doesn't need to. And if you've ever seen her in any interview, she's a force to be reckoned with herself. You know, she's a very, she's just a force. And you can tell that this is Ellen Kuras's directorial debut. She's been a cinematographer for a long time. You can tell this is a love for her because the subject of this happens to be someone else who takes pictures and captures moments. It does the same kind of thing that she does. Now, I can only imagine that she has reverence for Lee Miller because this is the subject she chose for her directorial debut. And I know she's been trying to make it, I think for 8 years, she's been trying to get this movie done. And she has the understanding to capture the most important aspects of these moments. She understands the beauty of a picture, the angle of a shot, the composition, color of how black and white, you know, you can make black and white shine if you film it correctly. Just staging a shot, like she really goes into that and certain things. You can tell she loves both the work that Lee Miller did and also Lee Miller as a character. And you can
It sounds like a fantastic film. So if the full price of admission were $10, what would you give Lee?
I give it $7.50 because I do think they could have fleshed out Lee's motivations a little bit more in terms of the script. I mean, but I gave Kate Winslet herself 850. Like the whole movie hinges on Kate Winslet. It's filmed wonderfully and everything else, but Kate Winslet is the star of this movie. And I just can't go on and up. I mean, there are so many emotions that Lee Miller goes through in the course of the film, and Kate Winslet nails all of them. She also allows herself a certain sense of freedom. You know, she's older than she was during Titanic. She has a different body type, and she has nude scenes. She's very confident about it, and she does it for purpose. It isn't, there's nothing gratuitous in it. You know, it's a lot of it is about who she is as a character, who Lee is. And I thought that was a really bold choice. And she puts herself out there, man. She's not afraid to go for it. She's not afraid to make herself look good, bad, ugly, whatever. She just does not care. And she leaves it all on the table. Can do nothing but respect that.
Well, I can't wait to see that one.
I hope it comes to theaters near you. I mean, it's very limited right now. If it doesn't continue to open, it'll probably be on digital very soon. Don't take that to mean it's bad, because it's not. It's a very good movie. Lee is a very good movie. I don't want anybody comparing it to Hellboy. Jesus. Now let's go to our From the Outside In topic. All right, so I talked about this earlier. This is going to be just casual conversation. Nobody's going to go on a tangent or a monologue. We're just going to yammer. Our true crime podcast, inspired by a true story, returns on October 14th. Figure it's a great opportunity to have this topic because he's not here. Troy's not here. You know, he's not on that podcast. He chose not to be. So you can subscribe now if you haven't already. There's already like 20 episodes, I think, on there. And been very well received. We were a finalist for a podcast award just recently, which is awesome. Did not win, less awesome, but that's all right. And
why'd you even have to point that out?
Because people might ask, did you win? I'm just gonna, you know, save you the trouble. Don't write the email. We did. No. But we were in the top 10, so there's that. And the last time we covered this was what, 2018, with Kevin Flynn. You remember that, John? We had Kevin Flynn on for a true crime episode.
Yeah, absolutely.
The he's host of the Crime Writers On.
He's a part of the Crime Writers On family, as well as he does the Law and Order podcast.
Yeah, Law and Order podcast. So big podcast. So that's a good episode if you want to look that up. But I kind of want to just talk about true crime and the horror of true crime. We're kicking off October. It's Halloween month. Blah 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 blah. Are you guys numb to true crime yet? Do you feel like it doesn't impact you as much now, because we've got TV shows, docudramas, movies, like everything?
No, I find that I'm able to keep myself in a place where if it's a particularly harsh story or has a sad story being told about it, I do still have feelings about it. But it also depends on who's telling me the story too. I find that Dateline does a pretty good job of telling a story. There's a couple of podcasts that I've listened to that used to do a good job of telling the story about whatever was going on in a particular episode. But like an example of a negative reaction to this is that I recently tried to pick back up a specific podcast that deals with like maybe it's like a sword and a something or other. I don't want to call them out.
Yeah, listen to Sword Scale. Yep.
Yeah,
the host is very confrontational.
Controversial.
That too, but he's a whole bunch of con words. Go ahead.
Yeah, he's all sorts of things.
So I'm not giving him grief.
And I had trouble. I only got into the first 5 minutes of it, and I just was like, this is way too disconnected from like the importance of the story. This is not good. This is not good storytelling anymore. Like, this isn't educational. All it is here to be salacious and to lure some sort of feeling of seniority over whatever happened in these stories. And so, yeah, it depends for me, like who's telling the story as to whether or not I'm able to connect with it and still have feelings.
I find that I'm most drawn to the TV series or movies because I do watch those anytime that they come out and I've heard good things or I'm interested. Mm-hmm. So like I was watching the Aaron Hernandez series that was on Hulu. And then I also finished the Monsters series on Netflix, and that both of those very fascinating and like, holy crap. Especially when you like explore all the details of those cases. That's the way I tend to like it. I like the dramatized or documentary style that is going to give me the perspective and understanding of what occurred. I used to also be a really big fan of Unsolved Mysteries, but I feel like it also always gave me nightmares. So, but it's the weird thing is with Unsolved Mysteries, it's the best time to watch it is at night. I don't know.
I've gotten burned out on that one. Like, it's just...
Yeah, I like the old one.
Yeah,
the old original. So
much better. Yeah, I like the first season of this one. Now I'm just like, I wish they could AI Robert Stack or something. You know?
He was everything with Unsolved Mysteries.
Oh, he was so good.
He was everything.
So good. So are you numb to true crime yet? Like, do you feel like, or does it still creep you out and get you on earth?
No, yeah, I still get weirded out. I'm overly precautious and scared and concerned and worried. So at all times, probably for no good reason, who knows, but that still impacts me. So no, I'm not numb to it, but I'm also not burned out by it.
Yeah. I often, what I have found is that by doing a podcast ourselves, like by doing true crime ourselves, you know, I put a ton of research into that. Like, I double check everything with multiple sources. I mean, you know, I don't want to say I'm trying to be an actual reporter, but I just don't want to say something that's incorrect, because I mean, people call you out the second that you say something incorrect, and I don't want to be called out. So I do everything I can to make sure I get it right. Not always perfect. Sometimes you gotta go back and do a little fix here and there, but usually pretty good. And what I have found is there are movies that didn't impact me at all when I'm watching the movie. And then I go and do the research on what actually happened.
Oh, yeah.
Then I'm terrified. And I'm just like, just feel very, very sad about all of it. I mean, you know, there are several that we covered where I'm just like, well, there's not much. I was at Frozen Ground, right? We did Frozen Ground, which is about the butcher baker. He's a serial killer in Alaska. And the movie I thought was okay. I didn't think it was great. You know, it didn't do enough to unnerve me. It was nice to see Nicolas Cage actually just be normal for once. So that part was pretty abnormal. But outside of that, the movie was just okay. And then you go and you research the case and you hear about what this guy would do and how he would pick up a prostitute while his wife had taken his boys out of town, right, to go visit family in the States, in Alaska. He'd bring her to her house, basically kidnap her, torture her for a while, then take her on a plane, fly her out to the middle of nowhere in Alaska, then let her go, then hunt her down. Like, that kind of stuff was way more terrifying than anything that I saw in that movie. Just reading that was more terrifying. So that's what I found, is it has prompted me to research things more and look into it more and actually read up on what actually happens. And that just makes me, every time I think I'm watching a movie now and I'm like, well, inspired by a true story. Oh, geez. Probably, you know what, like 5 seconds of it's real. Then you go look into half of it and you're, God, I wish none of this was real. Like, the movie was so much safer and more secure than anything that happened. So that's been quite an eye opener for me. It's pretty hard. So I'm definitely not numb, because it still gets me. But I do get numb to the movies, I think. It's just, you know, once you look into that, once you get documentaries, you know, those are pretty hard. So what's the last true crime property, documentary or movie, whatever, that hit you like really hard? I mean, left you shaken, or a couple, if you have a couple, it's fine.
To be honest, it would have to be Monsters for the Menendez story.
Why that? I haven't watched that one. That's not a case I was too excited about, but why that one?
Well, how they tell it is insane if you do not know the story. So I had no idea, and I don't even want to say anything, but it's just, you, every time you think it's one thing, it's something else. So it's so hard to tell.
Are you trying to protect spoilers from like a decades old murder case?
Yes, but the series just came out like a week or two ago.
But the case is like 20, 30 years old or something. I mean, it's old.
Yeah, but how they tell it, I'd rather you go in blind. You do okay. that sometimes where you're okay. like, you should go all in right. blind. I don't okay. want to tell you much.
Okay.
All I'm telling you is by the end of it, I was like, what the F? This is like, it was just a very insane story. And it made me so sick to my stomach. And I don't know. They did a great job in how they told the story to get a lot of impact out of you.
Hmm.
Yeah, I've been watching some of the episodes of that, and they do. She's right about saying that they get do a good job of telling that story. They have a way of weaving the story so that you get the beginning, middle, and end all at once, and then the next episode is kind of explaining what you just saw, and then the next episode is more of the beginning, middle, of end, and just really just telling that story thoroughly. There is a little bit of like questionable things in there. Like there's apparently like a big lawsuit maybe developing against Netflix about showing that the two brothers maybe had an incestuous relationship, which didn't happen according to the brothers. But of course they're going to say that if that's the case.
Yeah. I mean, that's, that's the risk you take when you cover true crime, I guess. I mean, I don't know. It's Ryan Murphy. Didn't he do that series? He's doing the monster series, right? It's Ryan
Murphy. Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
I don't love him as a story. I know some people do. I don't. I think he can't help himself but veer into camp. And he did that in Dahmer, and I'm just like, why are we going campy? This, like, I'm way too close to Dahmer because I don't live too far from where Dahmer attacked, so it's like very personal in my area. And like he was a boogeyman for many people for many, many years. And I just don't think it was the way you should have handled that particular character. And I've already heard from reviews that they're doing a similar thing with this one. And I think
pretty much
that's probably why I haven't gone to it. And I know the next season is Charlie Hunnam is going to be Ed Gein. And that interests me because that's a story I know pretty well. And I'd like to see how you're going to camp that one up. Yeah,
that's a weird choice for Ed Gein, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. But you know what? The actors they've picked have all been pretty sound, I would say.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They have. Yeah. They know how to surprise you with that. That is something that's notable with those series.
I will tell you two that have really I have found pretty impactful as of late. And you can go, listen to Inspired by a True Story podcast, and you'll hear several of them that impacted me, but go listen to those. What I will mention is a couple documentaries that really got me. One was the Into the Fire, The Lost Daughter, which was about an adoptive mother who finds out that her daughter that she gave up for adoption was murdered decades ago. And because they basically contact her when they find a body and they need a DNA to verify the DNA match. And it's her basically becoming her champion for this daughter that she gave up and now is murdered and no killer has been found. And it takes some twists and it's really, I mean, it really is kind of powerful about family and that sort of thing too. So I recommend that one. These are both on Netflix. And the other one is American Nightmare.
I was going to bring that one up. Yeah.
That one, man, that punched me in the stomach because I thought I knew exactly what was going on. I won't spoil it because honestly, I didn't know the story and having it unravel the way it did really, every episode felt like I felt completely different about where I was the episode before. So I can't recommend both of those enough. I mean, those are some really powerful ones.
I consume a lot of Dateline, and
story, you mention Dateline all the time. I think you just sit around and like, I don't know. That's your
point.
I
mean, some Werther's candy and just
it really is my Dateline. Like it makes me feel safe. I don't know. I every time Keith Morrison's on the TV or in my ears when it comes to the podcast, I'm good to go. But that story is covered in Dateline. And I like watching the juxtaposition between the Dateline coverage and the Netflix coverage because it really is practically two different stories. And
is it because they went in with an agenda, and this is after the fact, the American Nightmare one, or what?
Pretty much. Because Dateline has to work with the police, right?
Sure.
They can't, they got to be very careful as to what they do as far as working with the police. That way, that's how they keep the and I have an example as to why that is. But they have to keep the police as far as those relationships fresh and clean so that they can continue making the show for eons and eons as they have been. And an American Nightmare had no, it had no, like, hold over it for the police, and you see exactly a different point of view, and it is interesting. Like another example is that I actually had a friend whose family was covered on Dateline. Mm-hmm. And I sat down and watched that episode, and it is it's hysterical what kind of shade they throw at this, because the it deals with her sister-in-law and how her sister-in-law killed her husband. And or you know and she was seeing the pastor of the church, and the whole thing about it was there's no way that this woman didn't kill her husband, because there are fries that are uneaten on the counter, and the way those fries needed to be eaten right away or else they weren't as good, and but everyone loves those fries.
What
it is, yeah, it's an insane story. They paint the family in a certain light just because they're working with the police so much. And so that's what the drawback to Dateline is.
Well, that's interesting. I'm curious about the whole Fry case, but what are you going to do? I think it's worth mentioning, like, Baby Reindeer. I mean, this one is, that is a series inspired by a true story, based on a true story. Like, that was a big sales pitch. And now the woman who is the center of that, who basically announced it herself that she was the center of it, nobody like named her or anything. Now she's suing Netflix for, I don't know, $170 million or whatever. And, you know, I'm sure she'll get something out of it. But it's just, it's wild, because, you know, you watch it and you're like, well, if any of this is true, because it would have to be a little too true for her to have any case of having her name just, you know, smirched or whatever. Because if it's outlandishly not true, then you just say, well, that's fictional, you know. But if it's very close to truth, then I wouldn't want anyone to know it was me anyway, because that lady is a wackadoo and not healthy. I don't know if you guys have seen Baby Reindeer, but she is insane, like nuts.
Is that,
I started watching it, but I didn't get through too much.
It's I don't love the show, because it's basically like, what happens if you hang out with your stalker? Shit's gonna go wrong, I guess. I mean, don't hang out with a stalker. I don't like, once you have the, once you make the understanding, don't feel sorry for a stalker. Get rid of them and then get as far away as you can, and make sure you have a burner phone, whatever. Just get the hell away as much as you can, as quick as you can. I don't get it.
Yeah, her claim is that something that there was enough details in the story of the show that people figured out who she was.
Bullshit. And they were she named herself. Nobody, she says that happened. Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, yeah.
No, if she claims that that happened, but if you, there have been numerous looks at this, and that's just not the case. Like, she basically gave herself up, like, hey, that's me. You know, she claims she's getting all these death threats and da 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 da. And I don't know. There's nothing that seems to justify what she's claiming that I've
seen. Yeah. But on the other hand, if Netflix would have just changed the wording a little bit, they would have been okay. So if they would have said this is inspired by a true story, she wouldn't have any sort of hold over them. But instead, they release it as in this is a true story.
Yeah, they should have just left it alone. And but, you know, it's a sales pitch. That's the funny part. You can put. And we've learned this from doing the podcast, right? You can put inspired or based on a true story on anything, no matter how close to truth it is, and then just cherry pick the hell out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just cherry
pick. Scream is a perfectly good example, speaking of Halloween movies.
Yeah, Scream's a perfectly good example. And by the way, the true story behind that one is far more horrible than anything that ever happened in any Scream movie. Go listen to that episode if you want to be like freaked out, because the Gainesville Ripper was no joke. No joke at all.
He was a little bit of a joke.
Well, I mean, he never did say what his favorite scary movie was. And that right there, go to hell. Go to hell. Everything else Agreed. He did, terrible, but that was worse. Not kidding. What he did was the worst you could possibly do. Ugh. Guy just creeped me out. Do you think we got too much of this genre? Honest Engine. We got too much true crime. Like, maybe we need to go back to Superman and tights or something more positive. Some comedies. I miss some real genius kind of action in the world, you know?
There's so much of everything that you can cherry pick whatever you want to watch. So yeah, maybe there is too much or a lot of true crime. But there's a lot of everything else too. There's a lot of comic book stuff. There's a lot of sci-fi stuff. There's a lot of dramas. There is crap true crime that you can watch. I'm thinking of stuff like there's those ID Discovery true crime shows that drive me nuts because you have so many of them that are like husbands who die because they said the wrong thing to their wife, or husbands who die because their wife was angry, or husbands. All of them are husbands dying is what I'm getting at. You can have all those shows, and some of them are great. Some of them have weird recreations in them. So yeah, is it too much? I don't know. I don't think so. There's no such thing as too much when everything is so much.
Yeah, I feel like I get a good learning experience, if anything, out of true crime. Like,
that's a poor choice of words.
Well, she didn't say training. She just said learning.
Yeah, I do. Like, I've learned different things to, like, they were able to get in because this was in this way, and you should actually do this. And so it's helped me to what I feel is make myself feel safer.
No, safer is the right word. John tried to make a joke and say, be very paranoid, but that's a right way to be, I think, in the world. Like, there's nothing wrong with, don't be too paranoid, but if it makes you a safer and more aware person, I think that's a good thing. I mean, how many of these things we've heard were, somebody had no idea someone was watching them, following them, you know, standing outside their damn window. Michael Myers is walking right behind people and nobody figures it out. They just turn around and go, oh, he's not there. I guess nobody's. Man, I'll be running back and checking around that bush. You know what I mean? These movies help. What has it done to make you safer, Amanda?
Well, I don't want to tell then they figure out how to bypass it.
That's right.
It.
Good call. Good call.
I am, like, very paranoid about my safety, though. And I got a gun, so just know that.
All right. Good to know.
I'm actually a very good shot.
Nobody's coming
it
over.
It makes me cry, but I am real good.
Nobody's coming to bother you, I promise you.
I'm just saying.
But it is something that, you know, you have to be aware of or conscious of, and especially as a woman, you know, be more so, right? But I think everybody should. You know, even when I go for a run in the park, I mean, even more so now because of true crime, probably, but I am hyper aware of all my surroundings, and I do not like going around a corner. I don't like when people come running up behind me. There's a good chance I'm going to stop and pull over and be like, go, man, go run. You know, those kinds of things, which used to be just blind fun. Now I overthink probably. And that's probably because we have too much of it.
I'm going to end up dead somewhere because I don't. I don't worry about any of that stuff. I don't.
And that's your right. You know, be oblivious. Enjoy. We look forward to covering you on a future episode of Inspired by True Story.
You know, I run in safe places. I make sure so I know
a lot of people that turn up missing. Yep. A lot of people. A lot of them. Yeah.
I don't run in the middle of the woods.
Well, you probably run on a very busy street.
Yes, I run a very busy street, or I go to a very very well-known running track.
So it's completely different. So it's you'd have to run in the general area where I would to be comparable and understand what I'm saying.
Exactly. So, you've ran with me where I go run, so.
It's a giant bridge, and if anybody's going to take you, a big lumbering ox like you, it's probably going to be noticed. But somebody like Amanda, like, you know, she's walking around. And unfortunately, you know what I have learned? I learned this. Sadly, because of being hyper aware, nobody gives a shit half the time.
They do not. They do not want to get involved because they don't want to get hurt either, and they expect somebody else to deal with it.
That's the thing that I think true crime has taught me to be very, very sad about, because I can't tell you how many different episodes of whatever I've watched and somebody saw something, but they didn't think about it. You know, the whole adage is if you see something, say something. See something, say something, and people aren't doing that, and they just kind of go about their business, and it's something terrible that they should have said something about, and it could have prevented what might have come later. You know, I get it, but it's made me hyper aware of my surroundings and paying attention to stuff, And then you see other people, like if you see something, you just know that people are just turning their head. They're just turning away. Like they don't want any part of it. Like Amanda said, they just don't want to look, don't want to be involved, want to live my best life, which involves not being involved. It's sad. It's sad that we are like that as a society. When I was growing up, people were always trying to do things for their neighbors, their friends, people they didn't know, strangers, that sort of thing. And now no one will help you do anything.
Yeah, we've gotten very selfish.
Oh, man. Yeah.
In this world. But I devil's advocate, I also know it can be scary for some people to feel like they can intervene and still be safe themselves.
Sure. I get that. Has there been anything major, like information-wise, not safety tips that you've learned from true crime, like that just blew you away? Okay, well, I'll tell you one. So I learned this just came out that Sing Sing, which is a very good movie. Everybody should go check that out. An actor in it, John Adrian, J.J. Velasquez, was exonerated just recently of his wrongful murder conviction. He's 48 and he's an actor now, so he's doing his dream finally. But he served 24 years in prison for a crime he never committed, and it was finally cleared, and they finally exonerated, removed the charges essentially. So now he's finally a free man, and I think that's fine. What happened was in 1998, he was convicted of murder of a retired police officer. He was sentenced to 25 years to life, despite the fact that he didn't even match the suspect's description and had an alibi corroborated by phone records. So what I've learned is the world is jacked up sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And so when people say, why would you ever want to abolish the death penalty? This shit is why they're bringing it up.
Yeah. I mean, there's a recent death penalty case and that was adjudicated, essentially. The death penalty did happen. And the poor guy that was in there, everyone's been trying to get him out of jail because he wasn't guilty. And yet he still got executed.
Well, I will tell you, this is a fun fact for you, John. So Velasquez. Jesus, why didn't I start with that? My wife's Hispanic. Shame on me, right? Velasquez's case, I still said it wrong, was cleared because of a Dateline. Did you know that? It was because of a Dateline episode.
That's really cool.
Yeah. It started in 2002, and then, you know, they covered it for over a decade, and then their 2012 broadcast introduced new evidence in his favor, which sparked a review by a Manhattan District Attorney Conviction Integrity Unit, which ultimately decided to let the conviction stand at that time. But then like a decade later, he was granted executive clemency by Andrew Cuomo. And then it went from there.
Wait, so they acknowledged this 10 years before they actually gave him freedom?
Yeah, they said it wasn't good enough.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, apparently.
But then they accepted it 10 years later.
Yep. Cuomo released him.
Subjectivity. Oh, you gotta love it.
From Sing Sing, which is, you know, obviously why I made the movie Sing Sing.
Mm-hmm.
That's something I learned. And I learn all things all the time. Mostly it's that we as a society need to do better, be better, act better, play better, that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, as much as cops and lawyers all deserve the respect that they should be getting, but ultimately they're people doing a job and they can have tunnel vision just like anybody else. So the one thing I learned by watching or listening to a lot of true crime, because a lot of the stuff I listened to recently has been people who are falsely convicted.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Don't talk
so
to
the
cops.
One of the things I learned is I ain't showing up nowhere without a lawyer.
Nope.
And I ain't saying shit till I have a lawyer.
Nope. I am not talking to cops. And I hate
that's
to say,
a really good one.
I have nothing but respect for police officers, but I also have seen way too many of these where somebody said the wrong thing. And once, like John said, tunnel vision, once a cop is just like, oh, it was you, nobody's looking anywhere else. Nobody's looking anywhere else.
No. Yeah. As soon as they
anything you say can and will be held against you in a court of law.
Exactly. And lie detector tests only help them. There's nothing about it that helps you.
Not even admissible.
No, it's not admissible. And that's the thing that just drives me nuts. It's not admissible because it's not accurate. So why
it's
am I bothering?
It's more of an assessment of how you can do an exams What's in that? School, to be honest. There's more value in those for assessing your ability to take exams in a school setting.
Oh, that's funny. I didn't know that. Well, I can tell you that if they were reliable, you could admit them in court. So whenever it counts, well, why wouldn't you take a lie detector test? Because if for some reason I'm too nervous and I jolt it up a little bit, all you're going to do is say it's me. And guess what? If I pass with flying colors, all you're going to do is say it's me. So let's lawyer up. Let's get this done and let's see if we can move forward.
That's all I'm going to do is stutter once and they're like, oh, he's got a problem. It was definitely
him. Yeah, exactly. Yours is just going to be, it's going to look like you got electrocuted. All right. So I've definitely learned that too, John. So I'm with you. Don't talk to cops.
Speaking of Dateline, there is a recent Dateline episode called Sound and Fury. It's a crazy episode to sit down and watch. It's about a woman who is murdered, and her husband is an Atlanta DJ, and there's maybe a connection to another DJ. I don't want
to. I heard that. I listened to that episode. I listened to the audio version.
Such a good, like even watching it, because I did watch it first, but then I listened to it again. It's such a crazy story, because speaking of not talking to the cops, this guy was talking to the cops at every single bend he could, just because he thought the more he talked to the cops, the more he can control the outcome. And it's nuts.
He wasn't too wrong. Didn't say it worked out for him, but wasn't too wrong.
Another thing that a lot of true crime will teach you about is be mindful of what you're saying during silent, awkward moments, because a technique to get you to kind of pressure up is to leave a space of silence, because that's when people typically start to talk because they feel uncomfortable. So then they start to talk and then they ramble, and that can get you in trouble because, like Aaron and John are saying, that they'll use anything against you. So even if it's awkward and quiet, that's fine. Just sit there.
I wish I could remember what it was. It wasn't Dateline, but it was some true crime show. Because I watched it, I didn't listen to it, but they showed video from the interview, and every time they asked a question, it was like a Dave Chappelle skit or something. Because the guy, all the guy would reply was lawyer. He would sing it. He would just be like lawyer, lawyer. Like they'd ask him if they wanted a water or anything. Lawyer. It was like that, just back and forth. It was freaking hysterical. And I'm like, I don't know if he did it or not, but he should walk free. I like this guy.
Just for that one reason.
Yeah, he entertains me. All right. Anything left on True Crime you want to talk about, or you want to get out of here and go lock the doors?
Lock the doors, lock the windows.
Hide under my covers.
Yep.
Yep.
Load the gun.
Jesus. Amanda. Oh, man. Nobody surprise her. Don't do any surprise parties. My God.
Yeah, don't do no pop-ups. We don't do pop-ups around here. I was raised in Rockford, Illinois.
I was raised. All right. Well, that's going to do it, everybody. Thanks for listening. And remember, the next time you head to a theater or stream comfortably on your couch or just watch a bunch of murder crime shows, buy popcorn.
Or a gun or a hammer or a mallet or a bat or something.
Jesus. You really should talk to someone.
Protect yourself. Get something.
Yeah. Mace.
I guess Mace is like still, it's just,
here's
they can
my
close
theory.
Their eyes and still try to get you.
Everywhere you go, lather up in butter, because then they can't catch you.
What?
You slip right out.
That's disgusting.